car on a hot summer day, it heats her at 60 degrees, which is really nice. Then in the wintertime, when you climb in and it's 5 degrees outside, hit a button and, oh, it's warming up. That's really neat, too. So, those seats came out of a 2013 Expedition, and I went by Ford to get the schematics for that, and talked to their, I guess, master electrician technician. He's the guy that does all their wiring stuff. This is a Traveler's Rest Ford, and he printed off all the schematics and asked me what in the world I was doing. So I told him I was taking seats from a 2013 Expedition and putting them in a 92 Explorer. He basically told me, more power to you. If you need any help whatsoever, bring it by. And he told me which bays he runs. He runs two different bays over at the Ford dealership. He said, if you got any questions, bring it, and I'll help you work on it. I'm not going to charge you anything. This is a pretty cool project. And he also said, if you manage to do it all on your own, bring it by anyways when you're done, because I've never seen anything like that done before, and I think that would be really cool. So if you can pull it off, I'd love to see. I have a sneaking suspicion if I go ahead and pull this project off and it works, I bet they'll offer me a job over there that I probably won't take them up on the offer, but I'll be like, thanks, I'll keep it in mind. That guy was really impressed with the idea that I was even going to attempt it. So we'll have to see how that goes. I'll let you know too, but I'll be sure to put in a bunch of fuses and things this time, unlike last time. KJ4WZM, back to you, Harry.
KC4EZM. I guess the first thing that crossed my mind, and I guess you already crossed that bridge, is inside of the Expedition and the Explorer, roughly the same widths of the seats, at least fit inside the vehicle, and then we'll worry about how they bolt to the floor later.
Very similar. The bolts in the front are at a 45-degree angle on both vehicles. There's about an inch and a half or 2-inch gap between them on the front for the where it bolts in. I'm going to have to fabricate something for that. On the back, they're pretty much flat with the floor, and everything is really close to the correct angle. I think it's only about an inch different on the rear, diagonally across the bolt pattern. There's four bolts to hold the seat to the ground, well, to the floor of the vehicle. They are less than an inch different diagonally. It's a really, really close footprint there, so I won't have to modify much. It'll be pretty close already off the bat. The seat's width is identical. It is 21.5 inches each seat for the Expedition and the Explorer. Front to back, same dimensions as well. The thickness of the seat part that you sit on, unfortunately the Expedition seat, because the heating and air conditioning is built in, along with the computers that control that stuff, that adds about 2.5 inches of height underneath the seat. So it's going to sit higher off the ground. I'll have to basically put the seat all the way down. That's not such a big deal, except that these seats that was in the, well, the seats that were in the Explorer, the seat was extra tall in the back. The Expedition seat has an extendable headrest. I am going to have to leave the headrest all the way down, and if I don't want it to touch the ceiling of the vehicle, especially when it gets raised all the way up, then I'm going to need to take the headrest part and either get it replaced with a shorter headrest, or have somebody modify it, taking out the top 2 or 3 inches out of it, which it'll still be tall enough then. I'm 5'8". I'm not 6+, so that'll work for me, but I'm going to have to modify the headrest. That's about it. Just a little bit of fabrication work where it bolts into the floor, and then a little bit with the headrest, but it's real close. KC4EZN, KJ4WZM.
J4WZM, KC4EZN. That sounds like it's going to turn into one of those jobs that turns into more work. One of the things that you discover when you're building an antenna, you can go down to Home Depot and you can buy a 100-foot roll of wire and a little piece of PVC pipe and do a little bit of calculation and get an antenna up and probably get it all done in maybe a couple of hours. Or you can get your VNA out and hook it up to your antenna and spend the next 6 months trying to make it perfect. So just be careful when you start fiddling with that. When you say that the air conditioning is built into the seat, I know my wife had a Chevrolet Equinox that had heated leather seats in it, and yes, they were nice in the winter. You could run out, crank the car up, turn the seat on, and within just a few minutes be really, really comfortable. But the air conditioning, is there an actual air conditioning compressor unit and all that stuff built into the seat?
Yes, there is. Yeah. Inside of there, that's what adds some of the thickness of it. But it has cooling fans. In 2000, in the earlier 2000 models, they only cooled it with just a fan. It was either in 2009 or 2010. They were like, well, we call it air conditioned seats, so we'll actually use an actual cooling mechanism in there. So it was either 2009 or 2010, they changed over to not only having the fan blow, but it has a cooling element as well as a heating element. So it does cool. I have not gone and basically looked online to see what it looks like with one of those seats taken apart, but I do know that it has an actual cooling mechanism in it. It's not just air blowing. It's actual air conditioning air, and it is built into the seat. It's not run off of the car's AC system. It's independent, each seat.
I think I'm going to leave that one alone, Daniel. I can, other than telling you to check the schematic and the current rating and be sure you got it adequately fused, I got a funny feeling you're going to run a pretty hefty wire back there and do something. Just remember all that stuff that you had to learn when you got your technician license about installing radios in your vehicle and where to attach the fuses at the right places and all of that. I think that'll work for your seat too. KJ4WZM, KC4EZM.
I've been thinking about running probably excess fuses. For installing my radio equipment itself, I'm going to need to have a positive source and a negative source inside the vehicle anyways, and I'm going to fuse that off. I'll probably run my radio stuff off of it. I don't know what to call it, but I'll have some sort of a positive terminal in there which has a whole bunch of I really don't know what to call it, but you can connect a bunch of stuff to it. And off of each one of those, I'll have fuses as well, but the main blocks, the positive and the negative blocks, I'm going to have each side with fuses. Positive side has a fuse, negative side has a fuse. On the seats, I'm planning on breaking that up into three pieces as well. The heating is fused, the air conditioning is fused, both on the positive and negative sides. And all the adjustment points, the motor mechanism, that's fused also, positive and negative. So I'm planning on having a bunch of fuses for all that stuff and a way to access all that stuff in the center console area. That vehicle doesn't have a center console in it. That's where I have my amplifier sitting on the ground before. So I'm planning on making a center console, and in the bottom of it have my fuses and stuff, and in the top of it have radios, and put in a fan system to keep it cool as well. Have it so that it is temperature sensitive. When it gets to a certain temperature, it kicks the fans on. So I'll have a whole bunch of wiring stuff to do with that. But I'm planning on taking my time and doing it right. See, the vehicle that's my four-wheel drive vehicle. As long as I have everything up and running before it snows, I'll be happy. And I'll just work on it all summer long as I've got time. But I'm planning for that four-wheel drive vehicle to be down all this summer while I work on all that stuff. So it'll be an adventure. I'll figure the seat stuff out before I put them in there permanently. And I'll try to figure out how I'm going to run all my wiring so that it is both safe and, I guess, aesthetically pleasant to look at and easy to service if fuses blow. So I'll have to figure out all that stuff ahead of time. KC4EVN, KJ4WEM.
KJ4WZM, KC4EZM. That sounds like a really interesting project to get started in. I would probably look around at some other vehicles and see if you pick up some inspirations. I know that 49 Chevrolet truck that I reworked, I kept the, actually I didn't keep the original engine in it, but I put a 1950 230 engine out of a ton and a half snub-nose truck in it, and converted the electrical system over to 12-volt and put an alternator on it, and was trying to figure out, you know, how do you switch? There's not a lot of electrical in a 49 Chevrolet truck. And I figured out, you know, I could change the dash lights out. There's all kinds of little charts that you can look at and, you know, figure out which 6-volt bulb do you switch out for a 12-volt bulb, do all of that. And the only thing that I was having a problem with was the gas gauge, because basically the gas gauge was wired off of the ignition switch and it went through the gauge, the meter on the dash. Then that wire went down to the sensor in the gas tank, which in that truck the gas tank was behind the back, was behind the seat. But anyway, I was trying to figure out how to do that and came up with all kinds of schemes to do it, and didn't really like any of them. And one of my work companions says, well, you know, in these old tube-type radios, how did they wire the filaments up? And when you look at those radios, you had a 50-volt tube and you had a bunch of 12-volt tubes, and when you added all those tube voltages up, filament voltages up, they added up to like 120. So what I wound up doing was taking a 6-volt dash light bulb, put it in series with that gas gauge, and then I played with the size of the light bulb until I got the gas gauge to be semi-accurate. And again, I got that, that's something that I should have known. I spent one summer working in a TV repair shop, and back then we actually fixed radios like that. But basically, just take a look around at what some other folks have done, and, you know, see some ideas, because I was thinking with your radio, you can buy those things, I think they call them rig runners, that have got the power poles and the fuses and all that good stuff. But that's not quite the direction you're going in, but it may give you some ideas. With that, Daniel, we'll turn it back to you and see if maybe second shift has showed up, and we'll turn that back to you and look forward to talking to you next week. KJ4WZM, KC4EZM.
And KJ4WZM. Yeah, you brought up a couple interesting points there with some of that stuff. Some of my concerns with this schematic that I'm about to look at is, what if not all of it is as simple as positive and negative? What if some of this stuff is mixed voltages? Some of it's 12 volts, some of it's 5.5 volts. What if somewhere along the line it steps up to 24 or 48 volts instead of 12? Like, what if there's a step-up circuit besides a step-down circuit? Are all these voltages 12 volts or not? Or are some of these lines, it's not just as simple as positive and negative? What if when you press the button, it goes, this line here switches from positive to negative, and this one switches from nothing at all to negative or positive? What if it mismatches like that whenever you press a button, or to turn the seat on, or change it from heat to air conditioning, or whatever else? What if? I keep thinking about that. Now, I might run into a bit of complexity and have to figure out some solutions. You mentioned the light bulb scenario, and I have another one. One way that I could use with the possibility of a circuit flip-flopping back and forth from positive to negative is using LEDs to prevent the electricity from flowing the wrong direction. I can make up new circuits and use an LED because it is single direction. I could use an LED to flip the circuit to either positive or negative to prevent power from going the wrong way.
The LED, be sure you check out the current rating on those things. They don't draw a lot of current. There are some diodes, and I'm reluctant to say their name because I probably get it wrong. I don't get into much of that kind of stuff, but there are diodes out there that will handle several amps and doing exactly what you're saying. I know when you hook up an older computer that's got an RS-232 on the back of it and you're wanting to operate the push-to-talk on your radio, the common way I've seen them do that is there are two lines in that connector that are energized by your computer. And I think you can pick which one you energize. They don't do that. They just assume that one of them is going to be energized, and they don't know which one. But they'll put a diode in that line so that the current can't go backwards like you're talking about. But they'll put a diode in both of those lines, and then they'll tie them together, and that actuates the relay or the base of the switching transistor or whatever it is that they're trying to energize to make your push to talk work. So, but check out your current rating. LEDs normally draw into milliamp, like, I don't know, 10 to 20 or something like that. So be sure you check that. Otherwise, you may get a single flash and that's the end of the cool seat. KJ4WZM, KC4EZM.
Saying that, that was one of the things I was thinking about, is that they don't draw enough current. Thank you for all the insight, and I'll definitely check out diodes and relays and things like that, see what all I can find. I need to go through these schematics here. There's also some basically instruction sheets too that go with this stuff, telling what the purpose of each one of these connectors is and what each circuit does and things like that. There was a lot of stuff printed off in writing as well. I hope that everything I need is there. It was pretty detailed, but I have no idea which circuits are what voltages and what amperages and stuff like that, and I'm going to have to figure that out. I'm just glad I was able to get all the schematics for it. I didn't know that I'd be able to, but when I walked into the Ford dealership and let them know what was going on, they're like, oh, here you go, and started printing off. I think I have about 50 pages of schematics and explanations of what's going on. Maybe it's 60 pages. I have a big stack. I need to go through that and look. But you wouldn't think it, just neat, cool, up, down, forwards, backwards. It sounds way more simple than what it is, but good grief, it has three computers on one seat and four on the other, and the fourth computer on the other one is airbag control. It's actually located on the passenger seat, and it has all the sensors built in, so it will set the airbags off if the vehicle is involved in a collision. I'm going to leave that circuit powered down because I don't want my seats blowing up. I don't have airbags anywhere else in the vehicle, so I don't want my seats blowing up if I'm in a crash. But it has a total of seven computers on those two seats there, which is crazy. Anyways, we'll catch you later on here. Well, I'll turn it back to you real quick. KC4EZM, KJ4WZM.
Museum. GM, KC4EZ, and I think you've got a challenge there, Daniel. I'll be curious to see how all that turns out. I guess my only real advice to you is don't overthink it, and don't make it overly complicated. And if you could spend some time in an expedition and had all that in it, and take a look at their wiring harness, that might give you some hints. I know when I rebuilt that truck, my dad worked for a Chevrolet dealer down in Statesville, and he gave me a wiring harness out of, I don't know what it was, a Camaro or something like that, that they had replaced, so I could have the connectors and things like that to rewire this truck, because everything in that truck had the old rubber insulation with the cloth covering on the outside, and after, I don't know, 50 years, it kind of dried out and cracked, and when you touched it, it fell apart. And I found out there why they had to replace that wiring harness. Somebody had put a high-powered sound system in that car and had gone into the wiring harness and basically spliced in wires, and you know, your factory sound system, you could run I'm going to say an 18-gauge wire, and it would handle all the power that factory sound system and would use. And when you put in I don't know how many watts your sound system would have that you put in the trunk of your car, but when you put in that much extra power and tied that number 12 wire into that number 18 wire, the rest of the wiring harness turned into this fused mass of copper and plastic, and that was what he gave me, just so I could have the end connectors and stuff, so I can sort of tell you what happens when you don't do it right. With that, we'll turn it back to you, Daniel. Enjoy talking. KJ4WZM, KC4EZN.
KJ4WZM. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, the whole sound system thing. That's what caused our vehicle fire to begin with. 6 years ago, I put a sound system in that Explorer. I used it for about 2 years, and I decided that I didn't deliberately decide, but eventually I kind of outgrew the whole idea. I grew up in a way and decided I didn't need all that anymore. But it was 1,500 watts, and it ran 2-gauge wire into the amplifier, and each one of the speakers just in the door alone, just the door speakers, each one of those had as much power running to each speaker as the entire stock stereo system has all together. So I know what you mean there. And then the speakers in the back, they had 1,000 watts going to the box in the back, and I had heavy gauge wire going to that thing. I think it was I think I was running 8 or 10 gauge wire, maybe it was bigger than that, to the speakers in the back.
About right. My son had a 240SX, and the sound system in it had died before he bought the car, and we took it out, and I was really surprised at how heavy the wires were, not only sending power to that amplifier that was back in the trunk, and it was really not that big an amplifier, but still had a pretty good size wire. It was like a number 8 or number 10 stranded wire pair, you know, going back there, and then the wires coming back to the speaker were more in the 12 gauge range. So yeah, I'm not surprised. You check all that out. We'll talk to you later. KJ4WZM, KC4EZN.
Hello, Harry. Well, I appreciate you hanging around for comments, and I'll definitely let you know how my little project goes. show you pictures along the way, I guess, and everything. I got a lot of reading to do and a lot of playing around to do. I'll probably do my playing around with a 12-volt battery not inside the vehicle, just playing with the seats and hopefully not fry anything. But sounds good, Harry. Well, we'll catch you later on down the road. Thanks for hanging around for comments. KJ4EZN, KJ4WZM. Questions or comments, call KJ4WZM.
WZM. On everyone else on the net who's left, please check in N4ZLK. Shane, I'm at home in Cleveland. No traffic and no table tonight. Hope you're doing well, Daniel.
That's N4ZLK. That is Shane in Cleveland. Thanks for checking in, Shane. Hope you're doing well. Any other stations, A through Z, call KJ4WZM.
KJ4WZM, W4DJW with one announcement. Yeah, thanks, Daniel. Just in case anybody tried to use the pre-net check-in functionality tonight, I noticed it was kind of light, and Landon sent me an email telling me that it did not work for him. So after the first less than a dozen people that used the pre-net check-in, QRZ quit validating call signs altogether. So QRZ, we use QRZ to validate that you are a legal ham, right? And if it can't validate it, it won't let you in. So there is an issue. Just be aware. There's an issue with QRZ and its XML subscription data. And it's not returning success at this moment. If that continues to happen, we'll look at an alternative method to validate pre-net check-ins. But just for the moment, be aware that that was not working after the first dozen people that checked in with a pre-net check-in tonight. And it should be working again tomorrow, even if we have to temporarily bypass QRZ. W4DJW, thanks, Daniel. Back to you.
Is there a chance that it will throw me out when I try to log my net report?
No, they're not the same program. Those are two different animals, not the same animal.
Good. I do appreciate it, Dave. Well, hopefully that all gets taken care of soon. Yep, it was kind of sparse for the net. I've got 46 check-ins tonight, and that is it. W4DJW, KJ4WZM. WZM now securing the Blue Ocean Internet with us. Thanks for checking in. We will now return the Peter back to normal energy 73 and good night.